Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. First, I would like to apologize for the lateness of this show. This was beyond our control. Blog Talk Radio was having a glitch. And it's not the first time, but it's very frustrating when you're sitting here waiting to listen to a show. So on behalf of Blog Talk Radio, I'm making their apology. But also I wanted to just let women know that we're coming to the time when we're getting to the maximum time for our upcoming healing weekend, which is the weekend of October 3rd and October 4th here in Philadelphia. And if you're interested in joining us, you must write to me as soon as possible at bonkay@aol.com. This is our annual healing weekend where women come from not only all over the country, but also from Canada, and we have a wonderful Scottish woman coming from the United Kingdom to sit and bond together, share our stories, and do workshops to help us move on through this healing process. I know that it's a big time investment and money investment as far as your transportation and meals, but there is no charge for the cost of the seminars itself. That's my gift to you for coming here once a year or going wherever we are and going through that healing process. So if you'd like more information or you'd like to reserve, please get in touch with me as soon as possible. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome my very special guest tonight, Deborah Sutton. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Bonnie.
Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And Deborah and I were just sitting there being very frustrated, not being able to call into the show and thinking, oh, these people who are sitting and waiting for us and we want to even be on. So I'm glad we were finally able to get through, which was a blessing in itself, right?
Yes.
And Deborah's been part of my Straight Wives Club support network. She's been very active in there as far as helping other women as far as their healing is concerned. When somebody needs somebody to talk to, Deborah's really right on top of it. And Deborah also has her own book out, Signs of the Gay Husband, Identifying Closet Gay Husband Behaviors, which has been very well received by members of our group, and I've announced it in our newsletters. And Deborah also had a very difficult life with her ex-husband. So, Deborah, maybe for our new listeners or for our older ones, maybe you can refresh their memories a little bit and talk to them about your situation.
Well, I was married 22 years, and I knew something was wrong in the marriage. I just didn't know exactly what it was. He had a lot of problems with depression, and he had hepatitis C and became ill and had to go on treatment, and I thought it was all these things, you know, the illness, the depression, and you know, I thought that was the cause of his behavior, and found gay porn on the computer, and he blamed me, and among other things. I mean, there at the end, I even had a man call my house for him, and the call was very unusual. It was somebody I didn't know, and he said that my husband was supposed to meet him for a cookout. The man was upset, so I didn't put that together for like a year. I kept thinking, why did this man call my house? Why was he upset? And I kept thinking of the word he used, cookout, and a year later I Googled it, and It means oral sex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just started putting everything together. My marriage was ending, and I didn't know why. I mean, he wanted out, and after 22 years, and I had really no idea why he wasn't making a lot of sense. And
now, Deborah, from the beginning, was there a problem in the beginning? Was there any way for you to tell something wasn't quite right, even if you didn't know what it was?
Looking back, I can say something was wrong early, and I didn't know what it was.
And this was not something that would even be on your radar as far as being married to a gay man, right?
I admit that I wondered, but then I thought, you know, maybe it was just my imagination, because why would
mm-hmm.
he marry me, and why would he stay married to me so long? But even early, you know, the question entered my mind, especially when he came home from the doctor with being diagnosed with hepatitis C. At first, he tried to blame that, say that I gave that to him, but then I didn't have it. And I had never heard of hepatitis C. This was in the
mm-hmm.
90s. But he said that the doctor told him a lot of gay men get hepatitis C. And looking back, I think the doctor took him for a gay man to say that to him. Well, the next
mm-hmm.
time he had to go to the doctor, he took me along, I guess, so the doctor could see he was married. I don't know.
But so that made it better, right?
Yes. But he was very abusive. In the beginning, he was very physically abusive and always verbally abusive. But he quit hitting and stuff. He quit being physically abusive so much and was so verbally abusive. But I always, like, felt the threat that violence was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout.
Now, when you were, was he ever married before, Deborah?
No, he was never married before and didn't have any children.
Mm-hmm. So,
and
how old was
I
he when you got married?
He was 28 when we got married.
Okay, so he was young. There would be nothing to tip you off with that.
No.
And was this your second marriage?
Yeah, this was my second marriage.
Okay.
And I had children from a previous marriage, or have children from a previous marriage.
Mm-hmm. And how was he with them?
Well, they didn't live with us.
Okay.
Yeah. But they, I mean, they came for visits.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not a step-parent to them.
Mm-hmm.
In the course of our marriage, and I wouldn't call him a step-parent. He was nice to my kids and grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
But when
they didn't feel
over,
any kind of emotional connection to them, right?
No, because even he really, I was very close to my grandkids, and he seemed to like my granddaughters. But when it was over, that it was over with them too. I mean, he just cut my whole family out of his office, Facebook, everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it was, that wasn't even real.
So, Deborah, since you've been with our support group, you've talked to so many women, and you've been involved in really helping others and others who have been supporting you. Are there a lot of things that you look at back at now that you say, boy, that was a sign? Yeah, that was a sign. I just didn't know it.
Yes.
Or I wasn't clear.
Yes. Yes. I mean, there were so many things, his obsessiveness with the computer, even when my kids and grandkids would come in to visit and they would want to get on our computer, he was hovering over them. He would take our computer out and get it wiped, and he would constantly restore it to factory state, and he didn't want my grandkids on it.
I guess he was afraid that they would be able to find something, right?
Yeah, yes.
Because today, kids are really pretty much in tune with the computer.
I
think much more than we are often, right?
They are. I have a 3-year-old grandbaby, and at 2, she could work a tablet. So
exactly.
They are.
Kids today are just so in tune to using technology. They're far ahead of me when they're like 4 years old. So, yeah, that's the serious truth of it, or sad truth of it. So I guess, you know, when somebody's trying to protect what they have, they're not going to, you know, let other people share what that is in case their secret should come out.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that you mentioned was the computer. What other kinds of signs did you now look back and see?
Well, He would take off on weekends for long drives somewhere by himself. And he could stay gone, you know, most of the day. And he'd come in, would you like something to eat? I'd ask him. No, I already went out and ate. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
This went on all the time, him going out on the weekends. And he would tell me he went to this car lot that's closed on Sunday, or to Home Depot or Lowe's. And he would leave while I was sleeping, things like that. And
well, I think also the fact that many of these men like to go out on their own and do things without you knowing where they are or what they're doing. Did he ever tell you that he felt trapped with you at all?
He never told me that, but I knew he did, especially when he decided he wanted out. near the end of 22 years, I knew he felt trapped, and he wanted me out. He wanted me out of our house as quickly as I could go. Before, you know, our divorce, we were living in the same house when we filed for divorce, and it was pretty bad. But I booked a flight for 2 weeks away, and he told me that was too long. And I called the airline and moved the date up.
Mm-hmm.
And I left and never saw him again. We did talk on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Phones were about 6 months after I got here. Once I got to Texas, there was a man that my husband and I both knew, ex-husband and I both knew, and rumor got back to me that he made sexual advances toward this man.
Wow.
That we both know. So I really started putting it all together and questioned him. And once I questioned him, he broke all contact with me.
And I think it's confusing because so many of us, you know, who live this life, there's nothing real concrete and there's nothing exactly that you can pinpoint. You know that something's wrong. And I think when you wrote your book, you had mentioned that also, that you kept trying to fix something that just wasn't being fixed and that you always had this feeling that you weren't doing everything good enough, so you kept trying harder and harder to fix something without knowing really what the problem was because he wasn't being honest with you, right?
Right. And now when I look back, it makes me feel like I was a desperate woman trying to fix this, and I feel mad at myself. You know, I should have been out of there for the abuse alone. You know, but
I think
I'm trying.
A lot of women, you know, do blame themselves, but I think also it's not overt abuse, in the beginning, that we look at abuse, we watch these movies and television shows, and we see women getting beaten up. And I think that's how we think of abuse. And when somebody's saying things to us that are mean or they're derogatory, we're not looking at that as abuse. We're looking at that as criticism. And instead of externalizing it and saying, uh-oh, look what they're doing, we internalize it and we say, well, what's wrong with me? And I think that's a very normal reaction for most women. And when you have a guy who's really narcissistic or controlling, and especially add gay into that, where he has no interest in you really, as a woman, just as an object or, you know, cover for him, then naturally you're not going to necessarily notice it right away. And that's why I always say our straight wives are the best wives, because they have so much practice as far as doing better all the time, not knowing what the problem is. And then when we're told it's our fault, when a man wants to go away, like your husband was going away, and he would take a day off or 2 days off because he wanted to be on his own. Where couples who are happily married, they take the day together and go away.
Yeah.
So we see that's happening, and so we start thinking, well, maybe there's something wrong with me. We would never think there's something wrong with him, right?
Right. And, you know, I had plans. We didn't go out. We didn't celebrate our anniversary. We didn't celebrate Christmas. We didn't celebrate Thanksgiving. It was just him and I alone at home on holidays mostly. But, you know, he wanted me there. I made a trip to Texas to be with my kids during the holidays once, and he was so upset.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted me there miserable with him.
Mm-hmm. And that's not uncommon for men who are in that kind of a controlling situation. They just want you to be there with them no matter what, and they're not looking to share you. And also they're afraid that if you go somewhere and talk to people about them, their secret's going to be learned. I don't know about you, but I know one of the techniques my ex-husband used, he would really start a fight with me every time my family was around or friends were around, purposely. and make them feel uncomfortable that they didn't even want to come back again.
Yes, and that was so hard because my kids would make a trip from Texas to Florida to visit me, and he would start, you know, an argument and a fight in front of them, my grandkids, and my kids were very upset.
Mm-hmm. You know. This is how they do it. You know, they want to make sure that you're alienated away from other people so that you won't be talking to them about him and getting advice about him. I mean, this is where their thinking goes, because they try to control the environment so much because they can't control themselves. And so rather than being honest and just telling people what the problem is, they'll try to hide it and control everything around them, especially us and the environment. So it's not unusual to see husbands like this move on, you know, more than one occasion or move further away from your support system so nobody's really that close by to you. Did that happen with you?
Yes. It was pretty isolating existence with just the two of us. I had freedoms to go to the store, go shopping, and you know, so I could go do things like that, but it was just the two of us, and he didn't have many friends, and there was times that his mother wanted us to go to Georgia with her for holidays, and we may have went twice in 22 years, and he was miserable on those trips and didn't even socialize with his own family.
Were you perhaps thinking maybe he's just depressed? Or, you know,
that's
he had
what
a
I
tough
thought.
Life.
I thought he had a tough life and felt very sorry for him. I had probably a harder life than him, but I would still feel sorry for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but his father rejected him. Not in the beginning of our marriage, but toward the end of our marriage, towards the last 10 years, he had experienced rejection from his father, and I don't know why, but I felt very sorry for him for that rejection.
And I think that happens for many of us. These guys know the kind of women we are. I always say it's no accident that gay men marry us. And it's because they know that we're kind and we're understanding, and many of us are in the human services field. We're helpers by nature. And when we marry somebody, we take it really seriously. And if there's something wrong with them, we want to help them. And if we're not helping them, if they're not getting better, we internalize that we're the ones who are failing, not them, because we think we're supposed to fix everything. So I think these guys know when they meet a woman who will be able to put up with their lies and their deceit and their manipulation, that it's no accident that they find us. And it's not just us. I mean, there's so many women out there who are wonderful women who go in with dreams full of hope and love. And it doesn't have to be a gay man. There are plenty of predators who are out there who are narcissists and sociopaths. It's not a sexuality thing. There's just dangerous guys out there that if you don't know this, they don't start off by abusing you. I bet he was nice to you when you first met him, right?
Oh, yes. And he seemed to show me off to his family and friends in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He could like to cuddle, and I read that in one of your books, like not to mistake that for let's not look that you're not having sex, but you know he could like to cuddle, and he could be affectionate sometimes.
I think a lot of us mistake that and think that will do. You know, it doesn't have to be actual sex. When a man says to you, "I love you," and they want to hold you and cuddle with you, then a lot of women misinterpret that, you know, need instead of sexual need. And that's how some of them are. They're very affectionate, but when it comes to having, you know, intimate relations with you, that's another story, right?
Yes, exactly. And because he could be abusive, but then turn around and be affectionate too. And I guess I was there for the crumbs.
I think that many of us settle for the crumbs, and we're always hoping those crumbs will become the cookies, and they don't. And that's the important thing for women to recognize, that it's a pattern that abusers have. And I'm not just talking about physical abuse. I mean emotional abuse as well. You know, they'll yell at you, they'll insult you, they'll make you feel like you're one half inch, you know, small. But then the next day or the day after, they'll tell you how much they love you, and they'll go buy you a present, and they'll build you up all over again, and you'll start saying, see, he really does love me, or I must have really done something bad, or he wouldn't have been so angry. And once again, it's like a yo-yo. You go up and down, up and down. And every time he sees you're getting too far up, his natural side of pushing you down will come right into it, right?
Yes. But I'm thankful that he wanted out. I'm thankful to be free. And I hate to think about still being stuck in that darkness and not knowing the truth. I'm glad I know the truth, no matter how painful it was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I think many women have trouble dealing with that pain because marriages break up for all different kinds of reasons, and there's never a good reason to break up a marriage. When a woman loves someone, they're expecting that love to be there forever, and we all build up these hopes and dreams that we found our soulmate in life, and we're going to build a life together, and we're going to have a family together, and if you had a family, then we're going to retire together and share our future. And when things don't work out, no matter what the circumstances, you know, splitting up is always hard. But when you throw gay into the mix, it just doubles the whole atrocity there, because that's one thing that we are not equipped to deal with. And,
it does. It's,
right?
Yes, it really does. It was the worst pain I could say I ever felt, you know, coming to terms with that. And it took abuse to a whole new level.
And, you know, I think what it is, Deborah, I think cheating under any circumstances, I had been married before, I'd been with men before, and infidelity to me, cheating on me is always the worst thing that you can do, because I'm very loyal and I'm very loving. So to me, it was just never acceptable, no matter who it was with. But on top of dealing with infidelity, it's the kind of infidelity. And I'm not saying this because some women say, well, with a woman you can always compete, but you can't compete with a man. I say you can't compete with a woman either. And when your husband's out there and going after someone, that's who he wants. And it hurts just as much. But with a man, it's a totally different phenomenon. It hurts just as much. And it's a way of life that's one thing to have gay friends, but when we bring it into our home, into our bedroom, and we think about our husbands being with another man, I personally, once again, was very pro-gay, but when I thought about my husband doing it, I got very ill and made me throw up.
Yes.
And that is nothing against gay. I mean, I have friends who are gay. My daughter was a lesbian. So it's not about that. It's about, in your bed, the man you love, visualizing him with someone else who's a man.
Yes,
that's just
exactly
beyond what we can be expected to comprehend, right?
It is. It is. It's just so mind-shattering because he pretended to be straight for so many years, you know, all these years in front of me. And that was one of the hard things that was hard to come to terms with. And I was reading one of your books one night, and you were saying, you know, you have to look at them as gay men. Well, it was hard for me to see him as a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
Because he pretended to be straight for so many years. But, I mean, I was finally able to see him as a gay man. Even after I heard he made sexual advances to this man I know, I still wanted to think maybe that was a lie. You know, I didn't want to accept it. It took me like another year to accept that, and it took me a couple of years to see him as a gay man.
I think it's easier when we have husbands who just come out to their wives and say, look, I made a mistake. I didn't realize this is what I was. I fought it all my life, but this is who I am. And, You know, it's never going to be nice when they say that to you, but at least you know what you're dealing with. At least you know that you're not the one who's at fault. But when they don't tell you, and they insist that you're crazy, or what I call gaylight you, you know, making you think that you're imagining all of this and that you must be the one who's sick, you know, they're not doing anything wrong. That's the part that really kills me, because that takes away so much from us as women, our ability to see things the right way, the truth, making us question everything we're doing. Did you feel that way too?
Oh, yes. But I even see some women that get that admission from them, and the gay man says, I'm gay, no, I'm bi, no, I'm straight now, and they go off and marry another woman, and this woman is really left, you know, questioning.
Exactly.
Herself.
We have women in our group like that, and they're married to what I identify as a straight gay man. Those are men who will always identify themselves as straight, except sexually they'll be looking for a man to have sex with. And these are the men that will marry time after time after time and not be the best husband to any of their wives. But the point is that they can pass as straight in the straight world. There is no way in their mind that they could ever identify as being gay. It's just like they have this little thing about sex, and they compartmentalize so well that they never even have to think about it. They just go have anonymous sex, or, you know, sex that they're not going to think they're not going to get caught with. But there's no way that you could ever, you know, get them to admit that, yes, I am a gay man. And if you leave them, as we see with members of our group that walk away, you know, they realize that this is what the problem is, even if the men won't admit it, then they're going to find another wife. And a lot of our women say it's so painful when they see these men marry again. When I say to them, what's the part that's painful? That they married another woman because you wouldn't stay with them? And I know it's painful because you keep thinking, well, maybe I could have put up with this. Maybe I could have done that. But guess what? You couldn't. I mean, there was just no way you could keep living like this. And it's a shame for whoever they marry, because guess what? The problems don't change. They're just with different people.
Yes.
But we always think at that moment, you know, you have the sense of jealousy. He married her. Maybe she can do more for him than I did. But it's a very bad way to feel. You can't get trapped into that kind of thinking. Women have to realize that if a man is gay, if he's going to marry somebody else, he's still going to be gay. No matter how many times he marries, right?
Yes, and he's going to be cheating on his new wife with men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just be glad you're out of it and moving on.
Exactly.
With your
you
life, because it's
the
not
same
thing.
Change. Exactly. They can't change. And unfortunately, what they don't understand is that they shouldn't change. They should be who they are and stop trying to be who they're not. That's the real problem. Right?
If my husband ever would have come to me and told me he was gay and that he wanted to go live his gay life, it would have been painful, but I would have been as understanding as I possibly could. And it would have gave me more peace moving on than the way he did it. Because he was very cruel.
Right, and that's what I tell these men. I tell them, you know, our women need closure. And you claim that you love us when you marry us. And you claim that you love us throughout our marriage. But then you go and you betray us, and you're not even honest about it. Women can deal with the truth. It's just all the lies that they have such a hard time dealing with. Would you say that's true?
I would. And I've had some gay men write to me. Maybe they're separated from their wife. They're already seeing a man. And they say they want to tell their wife, but then they start making any and every excuse not to tell her.
Mm-hmm.
They want to move on with their life without telling her.
And, of course, I get into very bad arguments with these guys. I say to them, you owe this to your wife. You owe her the truth. And then they come back with me and they say, well, there are guys out there and groups out there that tell us not to tell because our wives will take us to court and we should wait until everything is settled, and then if we want, we can tell her. But I know there are many men who will never tell. And yes. I know that from a survey that was done about 12 years ago in England with a married men's organization there that I participated, or women participate, and some of the men part of my network participated in. And it was just amazing to see the percentage of men who would definitely never tell and those who most likely would never tell. And it was the majority. So keeping this to yourself, I mean, I know men now who won't tell. They say, well, she knows. I say, how does she know? Well, she just knows. Well, she doesn't necessarily know, and she needs that confirmation to move on. And I just, you know, once again, those are some of the things I try to change, but I kind of cut my losses because how much can you argue, right?
Yes.
What do you think about the gay porn on the computer, Deb? I mean, that's a definite sign, right?
Oh, it is a definite sign, and I can't, he was with his mouth on me constantly when I found the gay porn, and he said that it's my fault that I must have given us a computer virus for clicking on links. Well, this was stored in the computer's history. It was a link I clicked on in the history to sites he'd been on. So, but when he didn't come in the room where I was, he was in the living room, you know, with his griping at me. But then he shut up all of a sudden, and I thought, oh, he's going to be quiet? How did I get off so easy? I'm going to be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything more about the gay porn, and I didn't think of it anymore until our divorce, because he wasn't a man that brought porn into our home.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to think, okay, maybe it was a mistake.
I know, that's a problem. We always feel like we're living in that story, Alice in Wonderland, where we went through a glass window and everything is topsy-turvy and nothing makes sense.
It really is. It really is so topsy-turvy when I look back on that 22 years. It was so topsy-turvy, and everything really becomes all about, well, in my marriage, it became all about him, everything.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a piece of me left.
That's because they destroy whatever piece of you left there is. And I often tell this to women, that it's a slow deterioration or it's a quick deterioration, depending on where you're starting. But I was starting in a very strong point when I got married, and I was stripped down really quickly by the constant, you know, battering of words, certainly never physical abuse on my end, but those battering of words and being told that things are my fault, that I'm not doing things correctly, that every mistake that was being made in that marriage was my mistake, and there's something wrong with me. He was happy, but I wasn't, so I must be the one who's the problem. And it just takes these kinds of messages to start stripping away your self-esteem and, of course, your sexual esteem. We don't have to talk about that too much because there's not much to talk about. You lose it, right?
Oh, you definitely lose it.
Mm-hmm. They take that away from you very quickly.
Yes.
In fact, I was just talking to my boyfriend about this last night. We were talking about Vivian Leigh, who was a very fine actress back in the 40s. You know, she was in Gone with the Wind. She was a fabulous actress. And she was married to Sir Laurence Olivier. And he was gay. And he talked about his marriage and talked about her and calling her a nymphomaniac. And when I read about that, I was so hurt because that's what my ex-husband used to call me. So I knew when he was calling her that what the problem was. And she was suffering with terrible depression, and I'm sure living like this, you become very depressed. Many of our women are depressed, right?
Oh, yes. And I read after she got away from him, her mental state improved.
Mm-hmm.
I read it.
Exactly,
yes.
Because once you're not living under that duress and those lies and sexual rejection, I mean, what woman who has a normal sex drive wants to be told she's a nymphomaniac? I mean, that's as insulting as you can get. You know, women don't look at that as a compliment. They look at that as a very big insult. So it's another way of starting to, you know, knock you down, to to make you unsure of yourself, to make you think there's something wrong with you when it's not you at all. But as women, when you hear these messages enough, you start believing them, right?
Yes, you do.
You know, when you read your book, which came out this past year, which is a wonderful resource for people, and you can find it on Amazon, it's Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behavior. There are many things in this book that you were willing to share with women about your own experiences. And
yes, when I was,
right?
When I was writing that, I was actually going through that pain at that moment that I was writing that. I was coming to terms with his homosexuality, and these were the things I recognized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I, okay, like just one thing on the list, okay, he doesn't kiss, okay. My husband didn't like to kiss. Does that one thing make him gay? No, but you put a host of these behaviors together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not one thing. It's a, well, unless it's one or two things, yes. I mean, if they're having sex
yes.
with men, you don't need anything else. That's good enough.
Right.
You know, that's the only sign you need. You know, if a guy says to you, I'm having sex with a man, that's it. Gay.
Yes.
And even if he wants to call himself asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, metrosexual, transsexual, transgender, whatever he wants to call himself, it's gay. Because when you have sex with somebody of the same sex, that's called gay sex. So I don't care whether he identifies that way or not, but he's having gay sex. But
yes.
short of that, a lot of these other symptoms that you wrote about, okay, so he wasn't a big kisser. A lot of men don't love kissing. And a lot of these signs that you would say in and of themselves wouldn't make somebody gay. But when you get them all together, right?
Right. And the big one, no sex for 10 to 12 years. I mean, that's a big one.
That was a big one there, Deb. Yep. And I think that many couples get into that pattern of believing, like gay men would tell you, that all couples stop having sex at some point. You know, they're very fast to say, you think that other couples keep having sex? There's something wrong with you if you do. Ask your friends how many of them are having sex. You know, they try to make you think that you're the one who is abnormal in that, because most couples, as they get older, then it's more about companionship than the physical end. But in the beginning, when you're young, that's not the way it's supposed to be. I mean, they use that as an excuse, but the truth of the matter is when you're 28 or 30 or 35 or 40, straight men want sex, right?
Yes, and that's, he was very different than my first husband, who was
mm-hmm.
my first was straight, and
mm-hmm.
It was very different.
Yes, and it feels different. And gay men want sex, too. They just don't want sex with you. I mean, it's not to say they don't want sex. They want sex with a man. So
yeah.
I tell the women, just like you're thinking about sex all the time, they're thinking about it all the time, too. You know, we sit and we plan these ways. How are we going to get our husband to sleep with us? You know, what little things can we do to make it more romantic? What can we wear to make the, you know, be more sexy? What can we do to add some spice to it? And all the time we're thinking about that. They're thinking about, how can I get out of having sex with her tonight? She's going to want it. You know, and they have to come up with the toothaches and the headaches and the backaches and the tired and they're stressed. You know, 50 reasons they don't have to have sex with you. But that's the sad part. You know, you're both thinking about sex, but you're both going in very different directions, right?
Yes, and my husband covered it all. He said he couldn't function sexually anymore. So he covered
exactly.
It. He didn't have to say headaches or this or that or the other. He just couldn't function anymore.
Yeah, it was broken, right?
Yes, he said that.
Yeah, some men try the it's broken excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have, for couples who, you know, are straight, you know, men do can take medicine for that. They can get treatments for testosterone, you know, to improve their levels. They can take those pills. But if you're a gay man, you're not going to want to take that stuff because you don't want to do it to start with a woman. And if you do find it, like some of our women do find Viagra and other pills like that in their husband's possession, we know sure enough they're not using it for us, right?
Yes, and I find a lot of women too, they go with their husbands to have, or the husbands go to have their testosterone levels checked. My marriage, a doctor ordered that for my husband, but he never went to take the test.
I think that was your fault, Deborah. You were too pushy. You wanted him to have sex. That was a problem. But unfortunately, it's a problem for all of us because this is not something they want to do. Let's talk about the writing of the book. You had a lot of people cheering you on and helping you with this, with their stories, right?
Yes, in the group, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some of the women.
So it's not Deborah's story you're reading, it's other people's stories too, right?
Yes, and there was some of the women in our group that wrote their own stories in the book, shared their
mm-hmm.
stories with.
And so that you're getting to get the point of view not only of Deborah's, but also of other women who are living this nightmare or who have lived it and how they're moving ahead and how they're coping afterwards. And, of course, starting over is always so difficult. But I do want to talk just for a few minutes before we have to hang up about your new major, major, major accomplishment, Deborah, because, you know, part of putting your life back on track after having this horrendous marriage, you know, it takes time to recover. It takes time to rebuild, and you were kind of left there thinking about where am I going, what am I going to do, and trying to find your own direction. So all within this year, you became a new author, which is truly amazing to be able to put together this book. But also, you've just graduated with a beautiful certification. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, Dr. Huffer's course. And a certified advocate for Americans with disabilities. The course is 6 weeks, 3 hours a week. There's no prerequisite. And you work under the protections of the Americans with Disabilities Act under federal laws, which would trump any state or local laws. You have to recertify every year. And this course does offer continuing education credits for professionals.
Yeah, it's a wonderful course that Dr. Karen Huffer offers, you know, several times a year, and it teaches you to be an advocate for people who are going through any kind of trauma or disability. And the wonderful thing about that is that trauma also includes post-traumatic stress that many of our women are suffering from. And so Deborah's now been trained to be an advocate in the courtroom for women who are facing court trials or women who are going through bad experiences and they need an advocate. Because a lot of times when you're on your own in court, you're not quite sure of what's going on. Is that right, Deborah?
Yes, and people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or battered women syndrome, they
mm-hmm.
have trouble, you know, putting their words together and things like that, and the advocate is there to help you through the entire court process. They'll file with the courts for you to have an accommodation or accommodations. Like if you need extra time or breaks so that you can continue in the court, those things will be provided for you.
And I think a lot of women who are going through divorce in these cases have been through a lot of tumultuous times. You know, it's not that simple. A lot of these men fight you, or you're already in a battered-down state. And they lie, of course.
Yes.
And you need somebody there in your corner, and that's what the advocate does. And I'm so excited that Deborah earned her certificate for this. I know you worked hard in getting that. But Dr. Huffer will be offering this course again in the fall. And for those women who are interested, I'll be announcing it when it's coming up. But do you feel confident now if you had to help others now, Deborah?
Well, Dr. Huffer was explaining that it takes about a year before you working in this, before you really start to feel comfortable with it. But she
mm-hmm.
lists you on a website. And I think I would like to get involved with some others and see a case work from beginning to end so that I can gain confidence in this area. But it was a great class, and our class had studies going, study groups going on every single night, Monday through Friday. And then we did 3 hours on Saturday with Dr. Huffer. And our book, Unlocking Justice, that's the book that we use for the course.
It's a great legal book. And Dr. Huffer is a great advocate for people with disabilities. And it's a wonderful way to get your feet wet into the courtroom. I'm not saying that you come out a professional after this course, but you come out as a beginner. And
yes,
that's a place of starting so that you can become more familiar with it. And it is a great opportunity for women who are looking for something to do that they would enjoy as far as getting certified as an advocate and going out there and learning how to help others, because we are helpers, but at least we can be helping the people who really need our help, right?
Yes. And now there were some people that took the course that were so familiar with the courtroom. I mean, they'd been handling their own case, so they were very knowledgeable, and some of them might come out of this ready to go. When I was going through my divorce, I just signed waiver to not even be there in court. I just walked away. I didn't ask for anything. So I wasn't involved in the courts. So
you learned a lot about that now, right?
Yes, and some of the people were taking this for personal reasons, going through foreclosures, divorce, or child custody cases.
So I think it's wonderful now that you have some background that you can help other women with some advice on that too, right?
I do. I was so happy to take this course.
I'm so glad you did, Deborah, because you'll be a great advocate for all of our women. So unfortunately, we've run out of time, and I want to thank you so much and apologize for the Blog Talk Radio glitch, but I'm so glad we were able to get the show in. And I'm really hoping you'll come back here again in a couple of months, because women hearing from you feel inspired, Deborah, and that's our goal, to inspire others through the words and the actions that we do. And you're a remarkable woman as far as helping others when they're in trouble with this, and I thank you so much for your support. And for being so kind to dedicate your book to me. That was so sweet of you. And I think that
really
together we're a great team,
reading,
right?
Yes. You really brought me into awareness and out of a dark place reading your books.
And that's what you're doing for others, and that's what it's all about, all of us helping each other through this maze of insanity, right?
Yes.
Into some kind of sanity again. So I want to thank everybody for listening to our show. If you have any questions or comments, just email me at bondk@aol.com. Deborah, I love you, and I'll talk to you again in a couple of months.
Okay.
And to all of our listeners, have a wonderful week, and we'll be back again next week on Straight Wives Talk Show. Good night, everyone.
Good night.